It's Here and Now. You may know author Pat Conroy's family, his brutal Marine Corps father Don, his literary mother Peg. You met them in the novel and later the film The Great Santini. Bull Meacham, played by Robert Duvall, was a thinly disguised Don, who in real life was a Marine Corps aviator who abused his wife and his children. In this scene, Duvall's Meacham, the Great Santini, loses a pickup basketball game to his son, then taunts him by bouncing a ball off his head.
I bet you're gonna cry. Come on, Mama's boy. Let's see you cry. Come on. Squirt if you come on, cry.
In the eulogy that Pat Conroy eventually wrote for his father, he described the real homecoming his dad expected every evening.
He would get out of his car, a strapping, flight-jacketed Marine idol, and walk toward his house, his knuckles dragging along the ground, his shoes stepping on and killing small animals in his slouching amble toward the home place. My sister Carol Ann, stationed at the door, would call out, "Godzilla's home," and we seven children would scamper toward the door to watch his entry. The door would be flung open, and the strongest Marine aviator on Earth would shout, "Stand by for a fighter pilot."
At first, Don Conroy was outraged by his son Pat's writing. He eventually embraced it and his family, but too late for son Tom, who was mentally ill and killed himself, and for a daughter Carol Ann, a poet who remains enraged at her family, especially Pat. But Pat decided to tell all their stories for real in his new memoir, The Death of Santini, the story of a father and his son. And Pat Conroy joins us from KCUR in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Well, boy, you know, we have seen The Great Santini. Full disclosure, Robert Duvall, my former brother-in-law. So we saw The Great Santini many times. And yet still, reading this book, the violence between your dad and your mom, between you and your dad and your other siblings, your mom and your sister, all of it laced with this extraordinary use of the English language. It still was shocking. How would you characterize that childhood?
As horrible as it could be. Now, I've been to places like Haiti, and I've seen poverty in India, and that seems more horrible than what we suffered through. But the thing about violence is it's something that never leaves you, never goes away. And when you're a beaten child, I think you're a ruined child. I think that stays with you for all of your days. And the sad part, it can also leak out into the family you make in the world yourself. But there's nothing good about the family that I can tell you about. And I hated my father from the time I was a baby until the time The Great Santini came out and he finally had a reason to talk to me.
Yeah. You say right at the beginning of this memoir, "I must examine this wreckage one more time." Why?
I got sick a couple years ago and I was looking back at my life and I thought no writer has been imprisoned by his family like I have in the history of American letters. I have been writing about this family for 40 years. This mother and father, my father gave me great literary criticism one time. He came up to me before The Prince of Tides came out, and he said, "Hey, I hear you made me a drunk shrimper in this one." And I said, "Dad, you couldn't catch a shrimp and a red lobster, so what are you talking about?" And he said, "Whenever the word father comes up before you, son, my image looms over your head, and it'll always be that way. And your mother is always going to linger there as your mama because you don't have the skill to write about anybody else because you still haven't finished writing about us." Yeah. And Dad said it bragging and happily, but he was right. So what I want to do is go back and try to tell what happened, what was real that I have disguised in these novels. Tell the stories of the beatings, tell the stories of the breakdowns, tell the stories of, you know, my brother's suicide. I wanted to, at least in my own words, tell the story I think my family lived while I was here on Earth.
And having told it one more time, can you move on to not doing thinly veiled fictional stories about them? Do you think, I mean, is it done? Because this is, I can't imagine there's anything left to purge.
Well, you know, my mother was always mysterious to me. And I fell for my mother's act when I was a boy. I adored her. and my brothers and sisters didn't like her as much.
You were the protector. You were the older brother,
yes.
The oldest son who had to protect her from the husband. But she then had her own issues, and it's like the old cartoon. I always think of this cartoon. Dad hits mom, mom hits the kid, and the kid hits the dog. And so your mother turned around, and she was very abusive to your siblings, but you and she had a different relationship.
And the story she told about herself, I bought, that she was a Southern Belle. And, you know, she would add to it each year. And the final thing was when I heard her telling her second husband, my stepfather, John Egan, that her family had been the richest slave-owning family in Alabama history. And by then, I discovered my mother came from the hills of Alabama in the poorest town possible. My grandmother had a third-grade education, got married when she was 11. And I just grew up not knowing any of this, thinking my mother was this sort of going to dances and ballets and recitals in Atlanta. And her life was nothing like that.
Yeah.
And I used to think she was a liar, Robin. And now I just think she was the first fiction writer our family produced.
Yeah, and desperately trying to ignore her past. But that stops, though, at your generation in the family. You say this is a family that I can say nothing good about my family. And as a reader, I'm thinking, oh, but you can. There are people who would envy the fact that no matter how much you fought, and it was violent, and there was a consciousness, you didn't blow apart like an atom, you came together like magnets. You told each other how you felt.
You know, it's funny, my brothers and sisters and I feel a connection that can never die because we grew up in that family. They were terrified about this book, as you can imagine.
Oh, well, yeah.
And, you know, it's a strange power a writer has. But the one thing that surprised me in writing it is that with all the violence we endured, with all the craziness, and my God, my family is nuts, that we survived. And there's something that moves me every time I get together with any of my siblings. We'll talk about mom and dad, but there's something about it that is quite moving to me in the fact that, you know, we have forgiven them. And they made, despite themselves, a pretty interesting family.
Did you ever think, you know, maybe there's some stuff I should keep back for the people who are living to protect yourself? I mean, you expose everything here.
You know, when I started writing, Rob, I told myself this. I was going to tell the truth as I saw it, as I lived it. So all these stories, you know, are so painful, but I thought by not trying to at least write about the pain, I was not telling the truth. And if I'm not telling the truth, why do I write? And, you know, I think over the years I've developed a thing with readers that they expected of me. And I try to oblige. I try to tell as much of the truth as I can get out of myself. You know, it's a pledge I've made to myself, and it's a pledge I've made to the books I write.
Yeah. Pat Conroy, his final memoir of his father and mother, The Death of Santini, The Story of a Father and His Son. Pat Conroy, thank you so much.
It is a pleasure, Robin.
Pat Conroy at KCUR in Missouri. And we're listening to some of the soundtrack for the other movie that came from another book, Prince of Tides. From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the Institute of Contemporary Art with Amy Silman, a 25-year retrospective of the artist's vivid abstract paintings and intimate drawings. ICABoston.org.